Welcome, Hemingway, back to the Hemingway List, the podcast of excellence. Thanks for joining me on this adventure. Just let me close these things, open this thing, go to that thing, refresh that page. All right, I'm ready to do a podcast. Part 3, Chapter 9 of Madame Bovary. Poor old Emma, how do you think the rest of the novel will round out? Still got a couple of chapters left, I think. I got 3 chapters left or something? Actually don't know. Hang on, let me check how many chapters left we've got. 2 chapters. This is the penultimate chapter. The second last chapter. That's exciting. Alright, I did not realise that. Alright, so we've got 2 chapters to round out the novel. Right, we'll have some aftermath and then we'll have some postscript, I reckon. Some epilogue. Swim said the mama fish. She said, "This line is very telling regarding Charles. The gentlemen were very surprised by Bovary's romantic ideas. Charles is just as delusional as Emma was. He continues to hold a romanticized ideal of Emma, just as he has from the very beginning. Later on in the chapter, he felt a terrible curiosity. Slowly, with the tips of his fingers, his heart pounding, he lifted her veil, but he cried out in horror. On the surface, of course, it is just about the physical decomposition process after death. Symbolically, Charles is crying out in horror at what is behind the romanticized facade, the veil he has of Emma, and seeing briefly who she really was. I wonder what his reaction will be when he comes across Leon's love letters in the box he is bound to." Ad Rathia says, "Hi, I started reading along with you all, but I fell far behind. Hey, welcome back. Welcome to the podcast. This was the chapter where I realized that Charles was romantic, like Emma, but his romanticism expressed itself differently. Emma never understood or recognized the romantic inclinations in Charles, or maybe Charles became romantically idealistic over the course of his relationship with Emma because of her influence on his life. Either way, there's an irony to their relationship. If only they had someone who could have encouraged them to talk to one another about it. Nowadays, couples are encouraged to communicate. I wonder if the dysfunction in Emma and Charles' relationship would have been, is, more poignant to readers from cultures that don't expect couples to communicate about their relationship." There's a big long comment here from Coralette, which I'm not going to read because it's very long. I'll read the summary. "In summary, after describing these 4 scenes, the death of Mrs. Bovary, the fall of Leon with the second act of adultery, the religious transition between the 2 adulteries, and the loves and fall with Rudolph, the prosecutor lays 2 charges against modern Bovary. It is full of lascivious details, and it is not fundamentally moral. Either alone would be enough to condemn the work. Who reads the novel of Mr. Flaubert? Are they men who are busy themselves with political or social economy? No. The light pages of Madame Bovary fall into the lighter hands, into the hands of young women who sometimes have married women. Obviously, these women should not be reading lascivious details, and as for the fundamental immorality, who is able to condemn this woman in the book? Nobody. In all the book, there is not one idea, one line in virtue of which adultery is denounced. I find it kind of hilariously sad that he thinks it would be a better book with a pompous speech about how Emma's actions were wrong." So they took Flaubert to court over this novel because it was so blasphemous. Ah, the perils of just expressing human nature, right? We all want to be able to say, like, there's good people and there's bad people. But, like, people just do people things. And adultery is one of them, you know? It's not a good thing. It's a human thing, you know? So, I don't know. There's this whole thing about, like, you can't go putting these ideas in people's heads. It's like, no, they're people. Those people are going to have those ideas anyway because the world is full of people and we all influence one another. Does anyone know? Oh, sorry, I'm reading a comment. Oh, that's from something else. Never mind. Ignore that. I did start a discussion prompt about what translation of The Red and the Black are you reading? And I accidentally just started reading a response to that question, which is elsewhere in the Hemingway List subreddit. I'm very curious what everyone's reading. I'm going to be reading a Penguin Classics one, which is the Roger Guard version. A more modern one. Because I've heard that the Gutenberg one is really quite not very good. So, you know, I think it's quite a dense book, quite a difficult book. So I'm going to make it as easy as possible on myself and read a more modern translation. Anyway, let's get sidetracked there by accidentally reading the wrong discussion. Al Treat said, this popped up during a Madame Bovary-related search. I wonder if Flaubert would think of being confused with Hermès. Personally, I think it's hilarious. Oh, under the character of Hermès, it actually has a portrait of Flaubert. Lol. Coutilia said, the priest sprinkling holy water and Hermès following up with chlorine gave me a chuckle. I really enjoyed how Flaubert juxtaposed the two, one representing science, the other a man of God, both powerless in the face of death. Starfall, 15, said, is Hermès aware that the arsenic was taken from his cupboard? I'm here for Hermès and the curate discussions. Yes, said Swims and the Mumfishy, Hermès is very well aware. He had to write two letters, prepare a calmative potion for Bovary, think of a lie that could hide the poisoning, and compose an article about it for Le Fanal. Not to mention the people who were waiting for the news from him, and when the Yonvillians had heard all his story of how she had mistaken arsenic for sugar while making a vanilla custard, Hermès returned once more to Bovary's house. Ah, yes, he knows. Although a few people... Oh, okay. Hermès, funny character. Oh, God. All right. I've just done a 1-hour elliptical session. Sitting here still in my sweaty clothes. This is my cool down. And I might even go back on and do another little bit just to round it up to 1,000 calories. Really sick of being overweight. So I'm going to try, for the 100th time in my life, to be not overweight. I think I've crossed the barrier now of, like, my whole... A couple of years ago, I'd say my whole adult life, I was in shape. And then in my late 20s, I, like, just... spiked up and got overweight. This is a very big sidetrack. And then I just wanted to be back to my normal weight. But by now I'm like, which one is actually the more normal now? Have I spent more of my adult life overweight or under, or normal weight, I should say, in terms of years? Because by now I've been overweight for, like, I don't know, 7 years or something. Which is, whoa, how did that happen? Anyway, I bounced up and down during that time, of course, during those 7 years, but, oh, mate, I tell you what, once you hit 30, your metabolism just goes bazonkers. Anyway, there's a sidetrack that you guys did not ask for and do not need to have. Let's read chapter 10, the second last chapter of this novel. It goes like this. He had only received the chemist's letter 36 hours after the event, and from consideration for his feelings, Hermès had so worded it that it was impossible to make out what it was all about. First, the old fellow had fallen as if struck by apoplexy. Next, he understood that she was not dead, but she might be. At last, he had put on his blouse, taken his hat, fastened his spurs to his boots, and set out at full speed, and the whole of the way... Old Rouault, panting, was torn by anguish. Once, even, he was obliged to dismount. He was dizzy, he heard voices around him, he felt himself going mad. Day broke. He saw three black hens asleep in a tree. He shuddered, horrified, at this omen. Then he promised the Holy Virgin 3 chasubles for the church, and that he would go barefooted from the cemetery to Bertaux, to the chapel of Vassonville. He entered Marum, shouting for the people in the inn, burst open the door with a thrust of his shoulder, made for a stack of oats, emptied a bottle of sweet cider into the manger, and again mounted his nag, whose feet struck fire as it dashed along. He said to himself that no doubt they would save her, the doctors would discover some remedy, surely. He remembered all the miraculous cures he had been told about. Then she appeared to him dead. She was there before his eyes, lying on her back in the middle of the road. He reined up, and the hallucination disappeared. One moment, please. Just closing my door so that the rest of my house warms up, because it's freezing. Okay, where was I? At Quincampoix, to give himself heart, he drank 3 cups of coffee, one after the other. He fancied they had made a mistake in the name in writing. He looked for the letter in his pocket, felt it there, but did not dare to open it. At last he began to think it was all a joke, someone's spite, the jest of some wag, and besides, if she were dead, one would have known it. But no, there was nothing extraordinary about the country. The sky was blue, the trees swayed, a flock of sheep passed. He saw the village. He was seen coming, bending forward upon his horse, belabouring it with great blows, the girths dipping with blood. When he had recovered consciousness, he fell, weeping, into Bovary's arms. "My girl, Emma, my child, tell me." The other replied, sobbing, "I don't know, I don't know, it's a curse." The druggist separated them. "These horrible details are useless. I will tell this gentleman all about it. Here are the people coming. Dignity, come now, philosophy." The poor fellow tried to show himself brave and repeated several times, "Yes, courage." "Oh," cried the old man, "so I will have, by God. I'll go along, oh, her, to the end." The bell began tolling. All was ready. They had to start, and seated in a stall of the choir, side by side, they saw pass and repass in front of them continually the 3 chanting choristers. The serpent player was blowing with all his might. Monsieur Bernicien, in full vestments, was singing in a shrill voice. He bowed before the tabernacle, raising his hands, stretched out his arms. Lestiboudois went about the church with his whalebone stick. The bier stood near the lectern between 4 rows of candles. Charles felt inclined to get up and put them out. Yet he tried to stir himself to a feeling of devotion, to throw himself into the hope of a future life in which he should see her again. He imagined to himself she had gone on a long journey, far away for a long time. But when he thought of her lying there, and that all was over, that they would lay her in the earth, he was seized with a fierce, gloomy, despairful rage. At times he thought of he felt nothing more, and he enjoyed this lull in his pain, whilst at the same time he reproached himself for being a wretch. The sharp noise of an iron ferruled stick was heard on the stones, striking them at irregular intervals. It came from the end of the church and stopped short at the lower aisles. A man in a coarse brown jacket knelt down painfully. It was Hippolyte, the stable boy at the Lion d'Or. He had put on his new leg. One of the choristers went around the nave, making a collection, and the coppers chinked one after the other on the silver plate. "Oh, make haste, I am in pain," cried Bovary, angrily throwing him a 5-franc piece. The churchman thanked him with a deep bow. They sang, they knelt, they stood up. It was endless. He remembered that once, in the early times, they had been to mass together, and they had sat down on the other side, on the right by the wall. The bell began again. There was a great moving of chairs. The bearers slipped their 3 staves under the coffin, and everyone left the church. Then Justin appeared at the door of the shop. He suddenly went in again, pale, staggering. People were at the windows to see the procession pass. Charles, at the head, walked erect. He affected a brave air and saluted with a nod those who, coming out from the lanes or from their doors, stood amid the crowd. The 6 men, 3 on either side, walked slowly, panting a little. The priests, the choristers, and the 2 choir boys recited the De Profundis, and their voices echoed over the fields, rising and falling with their undulations. Sometimes they disappeared in the windings of the path, but the great silver cross rose always before the trees. De Profundis is Psalm CXXX. The women followed in black cloaks with turned-down hoods. Each of them carried in her hands a large lighted candle, and Charles felt himself growing weaker at this continual repetition of prayers and torches beneath this oppressive odour of wax and of cassocks. A fresh breeze was blowing, the rye and colza were sprouting, little dewdrops trembled at the roadsides and on the hawthorn hedges, all sorts of joyous sounds filled the air, the jolting of a cart rolling afar off in the ruts, the crowing of a cock repeated again and again, or the gambling of a foal running away under the apple trees. The pure sky was fretted with rosy clouds. A bluish haze rested upon the cots covered with iris. Charles, as he passed, recognised each courtyard. He remembered mornings like this when, after visiting some patient, he came out from one and returned to her. The black cloth bestrewn with white beads blew up from time to time, laying bare the coffin. The tired bearers walked more slowly, and it advanced with constant jerks like a boat that pitches with every wave. They reached the cemetery. The men went right down to a place in the grass where a grave was dug. They ranged themselves all round, and while the priest spoke, the red soil thrown up at the sides kept noiselessly slipping down at the corners. Then, when the four ropes were arranged, the coffin was placed upon them. He watched it descend. It seemed descending for ever. At last a thud was heard. The ropes creaked as they were drawn up. Then Bernicien took the spade handed to him by Lester Boudoir with his left hand, all the time sprinkling water. With the right he vigorously threw in a large spadeful, and the wood of the coffin, struck by the pebbles, gave forth that dread sound that seems to us the reverberation of eternity. The ecclesiastic passed the holy water sprinkler to his neighbour. This was Homais. He swung it gravely, then handed it to Charles, who sank to his knees in the earth and threw in handfuls of it, crying, "Adieu." He sent her kisses. He dragged himself towards the grave to engulf himself with her. They led him away, and he soon grew calmer, feeling perhaps like the others a vague satisfaction that it was all over. Olverault, on his way back, began quietly smoking a pipe, which Homais, in his innermost conscience, thought not quite the thing. He also noticed that Monsieur Binet had not been present, and that Tuvache had made off after mass, and that Theodore, the notary's servant, wore a blue coat, as if one could not have got a black coat, since that is the custom, by Jove. And to share his observations with others, he went from group to group. They were deploring Emma's death, especially the Roe, who had not failed to come to the funeral. Poor little woman! What a trouble for her husband! The druggist continued, "Do you know that but for me he would have committed some fatal attempt upon himself? Such a good woman! To think that I saw her only last Saturday in my shop!" "I haven't had leisure," said Hermes, "to prepare a few words that I would have cast upon her tomb." Charles, on getting home, undressed, and old Rerault put on his blue blouse. It was a new one, and as he had often during the journey wiped his eyes on the sleeves, the dye had stained his face, and the traces of tears made lines in the layer of dust that covered it. Madame Bovary senior was with them. All three were silent. At last the old fellow sighed. "Do you remember, my friend, that I went to Tostes once, when you had just lost your first deceased? I consoled you at that time. I thought of something to say then, but now..." Then, with a loud groan that shook his whole chest, "Ah, this is the end for me, do you see? I saw my wife go, then my son, and now today it's my daughter." He wanted to go back at once to Bertaux, saying that he could not sleep in this house. He even refused to see his granddaughter. "No, no, it would grieve me too much. Only you'll kiss her many times for me. Goodbye. You're a good fellow, and then I shall never forget that," he said, slapping his thigh. "Never fear, you shall always have your turkey." But when he reached the top of the hill, he turned back, and as he had turned once before on the road of St. Victor, when he had parted from her. The windows of the village were all on fire beneath the slanting rays of the sun sinking behind the field. He put his hand over his eyes and saw in the horizon an enclosure of walls where trees here and there formed black clusters between white stones. Then he went on his way at a gentle trot, for his nag had gone lame. Despite their fatigue, Charles and his mother stayed very long that evening talking together. They spoke of days of the past and of the future. She would come to live at Yonville. She would keep house for him. They would never part again. She was ingenuous and caressing, rejoicing in her heart at gaining once more her affection that had wandered from her for so many years. Midnight struck. The village, as usual, was silent, and Charles, awake, thought always of her. Rudolph, who, to distract himself, had been rambling about the wood all day, was sleeping quietly in his chateau, and Leon, down yonder, always slept. There was another who at that hour was not asleep. On the grave between the pine trees, a child was on his knees weeping, and his heart, rent by sobs, was beating in the shadow beneath the load of an immense regret, sweeter than the moon and fathomless at the night. The gate suddenly grated. It was Lester Boudoir. He came to fetch his spade and he had forgotten. He recognised Justin climbing over the wall and at last knew that who were the culprit who stole his potatoes. All right. There we go, another chapter down. Have your say about that one over at the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. I'm going to see you tomorrow.